This is Radio Labour.
Hello, I'm Marc Boulanger. The International Trade Union Confederation, the ITUC, is the top labor body in the world. It represents about 175 million workers in 155 countries and territories. It has just released a report saying that the austerity programs being implemented by many governments are extending the economic crisis and undermining labor rights. The report is entitled Ideology Without Economic Evidence: The International Monetary Fund's Attack on Collective Bargaining. I talked to Sharon Burrow about the report. Ms. Burrow is the General Secretary of the ITUC. I asked her how the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, had been attacking collective bargaining rights and why it was doing so.
Labour market policies and the attacks on labour rights came as a third wave of the crisis. You saw the crisis born and bred of corporate greed, of financial speculative greed. You then saw it turn into a bitter crisis of unemployment. And of course, while we had some hope in 2009 and 2010, initially, that governments globally through the G20 were going to take responsibility. You may well recall that Gordon Brown said in 2009 that never again would the financial sector be in control of the real economy. That was followed up 6 months later in Pittsburgh, where President Obama said quality jobs will be at the heart of the recovery. 6 months again in Toronto in 2010, you actually saw the world shift. The ideologues had won, that austerity was born as a result of demand for budget deficits. And of course, coinciding with that, we saw the transfer of public money into the banks. So in other words, the sovereign debt became accumulated as a result of transfer of corporate wealth or private wealth onto the public payroll. Alongside of those austerity measures then came conditionality, as government after government in Europe in particular, but beyond, were forced to go to the IMF for bailout measures, or indeed supported by, in Europe, by the European Central Bank and the European Commission. The austerity measures were extraordinary. They not only slashed wages and pensions and other social protection entitlements, but they went to the very heart of labour rights. So you will find in places like Portugal, there's an absolute condition that says that minimum wages won't go up unless it's reviewed by effectively the IMF and their partners. You will find that they determine that the extension of collective bargaining to an industry sector is not possible unless there was a particular percentage of businesses covered by employers and workers. This is at the heart of an attack on both the capacity for collective bargaining to distribute wealth effectively, the rights of workers generally, and of course that undermines the very aggregate demand on which you could try to stabilise and rebuild economies. I might add it's also undermining fundamental democratic provision. So we said enough is enough, and if there was no empirical evidence behind the attacks on the IMF and their colleagues in Europe, we would produce our own political report with empirical evidence indicating that not only were labour standards rights, but in fact the more equal a society through distributional tools like collective bargaining, the more likelihood of growth and the longer period of growth.
Does the report provide evidence that collective bargaining is beneficial to societies?
Absolutely. The report has empirical evidence that collective bargaining works, that it's a core distributional tool, that it creates more equal societies, and that it builds demand on which you can stabilise economies and rebuild.
If austerity programs are extending the economic crisis, what's the alternative? What should governments be doing?
Well, the first thing we need to do is stop the austerity. Fiscal consolidation is always necessary, but let's get the cycles right. And let's leverage it off growth, income-led growth, job-centred growth over time. As we say, the three things you need to do are invest in jobs, jobs and jobs, start with infrastructure, We challenged the G20 to put a trillion euro, into infrastructure. That's half of what was given to the banks. That's got the biggest medium-term multiplier impact. Beyond that, we need to look at the desperation of people, at the jobs that can be created in the care sector, equally as we can provide support for communities that are quite fragmented now. And, of course, we need to include our young people. Youth unemployment is just scandalous. You're talking, 30, 40, 50, more than 50% in some European countries. So let's start with inclusion, scale up apprenticeships. Let's give our young people guarantees of work and or employment in regard to that school to work or university to work or technical college to work transition. And of course, we want to see better social protection, particularly when you know that of all the people who lost their jobs in the crisis, 84% of them had no unemployment insurance. So the answers are there. There is money. It's simply a matter of political will.
So what happened? At the start of the economic crisis in 2008, there was a lot of talk about regrowing economies. Yet we ended up with all of these austerity programs, which even the IMF now says have gone too far, that they're worsening the situation. So what happened?
One of the more sensible directors of the IMF, a person who represents part of Europe, said to us, the point was always to determine what fiscal consolidation measures were necessary, but to put them in place when the recovery had taken root. Well, of course, that didn't happen. And along with it, the dialogue that has been used previously by successful countries to ensure a pathway forward that had the trust of workers, of their families, of the communities generally, was not put in place. Unions were cut out of the picture, employers were cut out of the picture, and conditionality born from bureaucracy and ideology without evidence was put in place. Consequently, we now have recession across the Eurozone.
What is the ITUC's role in regards to international institutions such as the IMF?
We have an advocacy role, and we have a consultative structure in most of the organisations. Certainly, I have to indicate that there's been no lack of engagement with the IMF. We simply agree to disagree about the evidence of the attacks on distributional tools like collective bargaining. We certainly have had a recent commitment as part of that dialogue from the Managing Director, Christine Lagarde, that ILO standards shouldn't be undermined. To date, they have, but if in the future they aren't, that's a good step forward. There's no agreement yet on what that means in terms of collective bargaining systems, but it's a good opening for further dialogue. We have also had a commitment from the managing director that, in fact, minimum wages can play a role. Again, no agreement necessarily on the nature of unit labour costs versus a basket of goods on which people can live with dignity, but an opening for dialogue and certainly a commitment to jobs. So you saw last week at the IMF quite a split, really, in those who were indicating that perhaps it's time for a slowdown, that there needs to be a focus on job creation, that people are desperate and that it's undermining both economies and, indeed, we would argue, democracies if you look at Italy or Greece last year.